quite
unusual.
What is that? It's the Ender.
Hello and welcome to the Glasgow Willy Wonka Experience.
We are your hosts.
I am the unknown.
And I am the Meth Lab Willy Wonka. Wait, Willy Wonka Oompa Loompa.
Welcome. You each get 3 jelly beans each and this little Dixie cup full of lemonade.
I hope you enjoyed that. Okay, bye.
Okay, bye.
Okay, bye. Just kidding. Just kidding. Do you think they really bought it?
Actually, this is quite unusual. Soik.
Welcome to the Quite Unusual Podcast. We are your hosts. I'm Noelle.
I'm Nicole.
And what is that?
It's the unknown.
No. I am living in the Glasgow Willy Wonka experience.
You know, I'm shocked by how many people don't know what it is.
So many. And it's just like, are you not terminally online?
Apparently, people aren't. If you guys listening have not heard of the Glasgow Willy Wonka experience,
first of all,
stop this episode and Google it.
First of all, how?
Google it right now, because the memes alone, worth it.
They're amazing.
So good.
They're so good. I'm so deeply obsessed with this. It's my favorite thing on the internet of the year.
Yeah, it is. And that's what we're going to be for Halloween.
Yes.
I'm going to be the unknown.
And I'm going to be the meth lab Oompa Loompa.
We also want to throw a Glasgow Willy Wonka experience party.
Yeah.
Where we just decorate really badly and then just have jelly beans for food.
Just like put like fun-sized candy on the wall. I feel like it would actually be... be better.
Hang dum-dums from the ceiling.
Actually,
tape them to the wall.
It would be a better experience than they had in Glasgow.
You know what? I feel like we could do a better experience.
Yeah.
And we could charge less than $45 for it.
We can charge $30.
Yeah, we'll charge $30. That'll be fine.
I mean, dum-dums don't buy themselves.
No.
You know, like we have to.
The dum-dum budget alone warrants a $30 ticket price, I think.
I'm so deeply obsessed with it, and I have, like, such serious jealousy because I wish I had fucking gone to it.
Oh, my God, I know.
It looks amazing.
For those who aren't aware, and if you haven't stopped this episode and Googled it, it was an experience, I guess.
So
it was Willy Wonka-themed.
But these people, like, didn't know what the fuck they were doing, so they had AI write a script. And
produce pictures like about what the experience looked like. And the experience did not look like the pictures. Let me just say that.
Because they were AI generated images. And then they tried to recreate it in a warehouse and it didn't work the same.
It was like, I saw an article that described it as Fire Festival, but for kids.
Yes.
And Willy Wonka themed. And that's exactly what it was.
It 100% was that. It was just... it's absolutely amazing. And this AI wrote a character that does not exist called the Unknown, mm-hmm. who's an evil chocolate goblin that lives in the walls and scares children.
Chocolate maker, yeah.
Yeah.
And then they just had this character there, and he was just terrifying children, which is also really hilarious.
Well, Nicole, girl power, the Unknown is a woman.
I know.
So, what is that?
No! I will say I replayed that video like 87,000 times because it just makes me laugh.
All of the time. And we just keep saying it to each other. It's amazing.
It's the unknown.
No. It's my favorite thing on the internet. If you guys don't know, please.
Do yourselves a favor and just Google pictures from it, because there's one picture of a woman dressed as an Oompa Loompa, obviously.
That's a loose term.
To go with the theme. And she's standing, I guess, it was the drink station. There's, like, beakers and, like, shit set up around her.
Yeah. But it looks like the meth lab from Breaking Bad.
It does. So. And she's, like, the look on her face is just, like, depression. And it's great. It's really great.
It's my favorite thing.
It's one of the best things. It is the best thing on the internet right now.
Without a doubt.
Mm.
Can I tell you, I have a pride point.
Yes.
For this week. I'm proud of myself, even though all of this Glasgow Willy Wonka experience has been happening on the internet. My screen time was down by 10%.
Mine was up.
Was it?
What's your screen time, though, usually?
Well, mine was down 10% to 8 hours and 54 minutes a day.
Oh, mine was up to 6 hours and 35 minutes.
We're different people.
A day. I was at five something.
That's amazing.
Last week.
That's amazing.
I know. It felt really good.
It felt good to be down 10% and have it be under 9 hours a day.
I used to be at 8. I've been at 8. Everyone knows my goal has been to be on the internet less, and I've been doing it. It's 2 hours less, to be exact, which seems insane.
That's a lot.
Okay, but what are these parameters that they're going by? Because 8 hours a day, I'm not on my phone 8 hours a day.
I think it's whenever your phone is lit up. So, like, if you're using, like, GPS and it's up, or, like, if your, like, audiobook is lit up. You know what I mean? Like, I'm pretty sure it's, like, whenever the screen is up. Because I have time limits now on my social media.
I do, too, but I ignore them.
I was going to say, ignore them completely.
Like, okay, not now. Like...
Turn off for today.
No.
Okay.
I shan't be doing that, but
no,
thank you.
No. But yeah, I don't think I'm on social media 8 hours a day.
No, there's no way.
No.
There are, 12 hours in a day?
Yes, there's 12 hours in a day.
So 8 of those hours, you're...
Just 12 hours in a day.
Like, that you're awake.
Oh, waking hours, I guess so.
Yeah, you're not... I mean, yeah, 24 hours, but you're sleeping for, I mean, at least 7 of those. You should be, at least.
Sure.
We'll say 5. 5 to 7 hours.
5 to 7 hours feels right, yeah.
Yeah.
That feels right.
Everyone's sleeping around that time.
Probably. I hope.
I think.
Please don't be sleeping less than that, actually.
Are you okay if you are?
If you're sleeping less than that, write to us at quiteunusualpod@gmail.com, and we'll call your mom and make sure that you're okay.
Yeah. There's no way you're... Because, you work. You're driving. Like, there's no way you're on your phone 8 hours.
Mm-mm.
Like, active on your phone. So it has to be, when it's lit up. Which makes... I mean, I guess that makes sense. Because, I don't know. I know how to get to work, to drive to work, but I'll still GPS it every morning anyways because I have unlimited data. And I like to know which is the fastest way because you never know. Shit happens.
The fucking future is now and I'm going to take advantage of it.
And we live in a town where there are so many railroad crossings. It's the most railroad crossings ever, I think.
Yeah, in the continental United States.
So, I mean, I get stuck by a train. I'm going to get stuck by a train anywhere I go, basically. That's what living in our town means.
Yeah.
So I gotta map the fastest, the quickest way every single time. So that's probably eating up my screen time, I would say.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense, for sure. Right. I think that whenever your phone is up, it's probably that. So just cut it in half, and that's probably what you're on all social medias combined, if that even.
4 hours?
That seems right.
Still depressing.
That seems right, though.
Think about on for 4 hours? That's
think about
so
like
draining.
Like, think about the hour before you go to bed and you're on it. And then, you're sitting on the toilet and you're scrolling.
That's true.
And, it adds up. It adds up.
It
you're
does
not
add
doing
up.
It for 4 hours straight.
Everyone's, I'm a bed scroller for sure.
I'm a bed scroller, too.
It's bad. I have noticed that if I don't scroll, I sleep better.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%. Because screens are rotting our fucking brains.
Yeah, but I can't stop. There's too many Glasgow Willy Wonka experience videos and memes for me to see that I have to be on the internet for 2 hours before I go to sleep every night.
No.
No. I do have another thing that I want to call out before we get into this episode. So last episode, Nutty Putty Cave.
Yeah.
So many people have mentioned that.
Oh, I hate it.
Listening to the episode was making them anxious, giving them anxiety. My mom texted me and was like, listening to Nutty Putty Cave, I'm getting anxious and claustrophobic just listening to it. And I'm like, yeah. I was like, I had the same reaction listening to you tell the story.
Wow. Honestly, thank you. That's really high praise.
Yeah. I mean, it is.
That was.
It truly is.
Thank you. I thought you were going to say that we had so many people write into us to tell us they had been in a cave once. One of our listeners, shout out to Magnus, got fucking stuck in a cave when he was young.
No.
He lived. Don't worry.
Okay. Good,
because this is when he was young, but
he's alive. He's an adult man. So.
He is an adult man now. Reading people's cave stories was freaking me out, and I responded, I think probably the same to every one of them. Hey, hi, thanks for sharing your story. I wanted to vomit. Don't fucking go in caves. Thank you, love you, bye.
Yeah, it's super scary.
Don't go in caves, people.
It's panic, and the last episode, it was very panic inducing. So I just want to congratulate you for doing that to a lot of our listeners.
Thank you. So, would you say it was as scary as The Woman in Black?
I mean, I don't find that scary.
On a scale from Zero to Woman in Black. How scary was that episode?
Well,
unsettling.
Zero's the like the low point, or is Woman in Black?
All right, let's just tell the story for today.
Let's just jump right into it.
Sure. Yeah, jump right in was a 35-minute intro.
I know. It's fun.
About the Glasgow Willy Wonka experience.
So this week we're talking about a haunted location that's right in our backyard. That would be the Haunted Congress Hotel in Chicago. I'm big into ghost hunting. She's getting into it too.
I like a paranormal investigation.
Yeah. But I was thinking about, we've been on a ghost hunt together, but I was thinking about how weird it is that most of the places that I've been ghost hunting, you've been ghost hunting, have either been like in another state or like 5 hours south of us. Uh-huh. And we're right outside of Chicago for anyone who doesn't know. And so I got to thinking, you know, like why aren't there more, I guess, like notoriously haunted places in Chicago,
mm-hmm.
you know, like it is the second city.
It is.
After all.
It's my favorite city of all time.
Me too. And we did have that gigantic fire that almost wiped out like everything.
Yeah.
And a lot of people died horrifically.
So many people.
I mean, like
just in general, right? So many people die in this city all the time.
Al Capone lived here. H.H. Holmes had his famous murder castle here. Why? Why aren't there more known haunted places that everyone knows about in Chicago that are like...
like huge locales. Like
that's where you go that you could like paranormal investigate. Like our city is not a very paranormal investigative friendly town.
It's not. No, it's not. I think we have a lot of haunties.
For sure.
I think that they're just like not appreciated.
They're not appreciated. You know? And they're not acknowledged. I love which is so crazy to me.
Thank you for saying appreciated like
appreciated.
That.
So I was like kind of like, well, I want to do like a hometown ghost story, right? So I did some Googling. And Chicago has quite a few of haunted places, but I think the discrepancy with ghost hunting in Chicago is that it's in the city, you know?
Right.
And since it's the city, there really aren't a lot of opportunities to just like leave an abandoned building that was once used as like a morgue or something.
No, because like now it's like Walgreens.
Yeah. Or, I mean, if there was one, Christopher Nolan would have probably blown it up while filming The Dark Knight because he just did that.
He did do that.
All throughout Chicago.
And we were just like, okay.
Chicago was like, okay, guess we'll clean this up.
Thanks, Christopher Nolan.
Bye, Christopher Nolan.
Okay, bye.
But I also found that a lot of locations that like where bad things happened are no longer there. So the structure.
Right.
So, like, we have the infamous St. Valentine's Day Massacre, where, for those of you who don't know, 7 mobsters were shot down in a parking garage. And the parking garage is no longer there.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, right now I think it's, like, part of a parking lot and, like, a piece of lawn.
Yeah. There's, like, a little fence in front of it and it's just, like, some grass.
Right.
There.
So it's not, like, that structure isn't there, but, like, that horrific things still happened there, you know? Like, could the lawn be haunted? Like, why not?
Fuck yeah.
What is tying a ghost to a place, you know, for being haunted?
But I think that that's a really good question. And also now you have me wondering every time I mow the lawn and I decapitate all of the grass, am I creating tiny little grass ghosts?
Oh my God.
I really hope not.
I think you might be. Plant ghosts.
Is that why when I'm mowing the lawn, you can't hear it, but it's happening underneath the sound of the mower? They're like, no.
It's like,
oh my God, it's so sad. No.
There is one place that has withstood the test of time, though. It's a place that many people say is, in fact, haunted. And that would be what this entire episode is on, the Congress Hotel. It's even rumored that Stephen King penned his short story 1408, which was also turned into a movie with hometown boy John Cusack.
I was going to say, does it have Cusack in it?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. So it's rumored that he might have penned that while staying at one of the haunted rooms in the Congress, room 441, which is also said to be one of the most haunted rooms in the building. But, I mean, no one really knows if that's for sure, but I like to think it is, you know?
I'd like to, yeah, why not?
And actually, speaking of the St. Valentine's Day murder, legend has it that the lingering spirits of those who fell victim to the St. Valentine's Day massacre are said to roam the hotel's corridors.
Ooh.
I mean, it's not the site of the infamous attack on some of America's most notorious mobsters, but it served as a pivotal location for Jake Greasy Thumb.
What a fucking nickname.
It's a mob nickname.
Hey, it's me, Greasy Thumb Gusick.
Mob nicknames are the best nicknames, I think, to ever exist.
They're very good. Okay, what would my mob nickname be? Look at me right now and tell me what it would be.
No. No something. I don't know.
That's really good.
No. I don't know. No, it's like I gotta say like no. No bullshit or something.
That's great. Thank you so much.
That's really Noelle. Nice. Also known as no bullshit.
Hey, you know why they call me that? You know why they call me that? Because they deal in horse shit, not bullshit.
What would mine be?
Ooh, I think you'd be like fucking something scary. Scary as shit. Like, definitely Nikki. Nikki's your
It's gotta be Nikki. That's a mobster.
It's gotta be Nikki.
It has to be.
Like, I just feel like it should be something very like undescript, but something that like sends fear into people, I don't know, just like Nikki the Beast or something. Like, why do you call her the Beast? You don't want to find out why they call her the Beast.
Or it's something like Nikki, totally like random, like Nikki Heels,
Nikki Bloody Knuckles.
Or no, I was thinking
Nikki Knuckles,
something that like is not scary, but you're like, why? And you're like, you don't want to know, like Nikki Heels or something, or
Nikki
like
Heels,
like Nikki Kneecaps, Nikki Kneecaps,
Nikki Kneecaps. Why do they call her Nikki Kneecaps? Because she takes a man out right at the kneecaps. She is holding a tiny, tiny bat right now.
I am. It's also a pen.
All right, Nikki Kneecaps.
So actually, to go along with this mobster St. Valentine's Day massacre in the hotel, it was a location where Jake Greasy Thumb Gusick, who he allegedly called Al Capone from the Congress Hotel before and after they committed the murders for the St. Valentine's Day
massacre. Oh, how interesting. So this has ties into it.
It has ties. It also has ties to Al Capone, which we'll find out a little bit later. But before we get to, I guess, the haunted parts, let's talk a little bit about the history parts.
I love the history parts.
Which I know you love.
I love them. And I'm also excited because I'm sure there's going to be a little geography in here.
There's
a touch of geography.
There's never not any geography in any of our podcasts.
Fuck yeah. So this is the world's foremost geography podcast.
Right. So nestled in the heart of downtown Chicago, the Congress Plaza Hotel stands as a relic of the city's rich past. Originally constructed in 1893 to accommodate visitors attending the World's Columbian Exposition, or best known as the Chicago World's Fair.
I have a deep obsession with the Chicago World's Fair.
Same.
I don't know if this is like, it goes along with like being like a young girl and having like an Egypt and also Titanic like obsession.
Egypt, the Chicago ancient World's Greece, Fair. And Titanic are like the three.
Yeah. And the Chicago World's Fair for me. Like, that was my Roman Empire before I learned about the Roman Empire. Mm-hmm. Yeah, for real.
It probably also has something to do because, like, we're from Chicago. You know, it's like hometown pride a little bit. So just some history about the World's Fair, because I'm not sure, like, if anyone else is as fascinated by it like we are. Because, I mean, we are from Chicago, but we're obsessed with it. So we have to talk about it.
Deeply obsessed. Deeply obsessed.
Deeply obsessed. So the fair was held in Chicago from May 5th to October 31st in 1893, which is so long. Like,
it's long.
So long. Long ago to think about, right?
But people came from all over, and it's like the late 1800s. So like, you can't just like, you know, hop on a plane and go. Like,
no.
You have to like take trains and planes and automobiles. Wait, they're not planes.
Planes, trains, and automobiles?
That's what I was going to say, but factually incorrect.
The fair commemorated the 400th anniversary of Christopher Columbus's arrival in the New World.
Boo him.
But it spanned
Bitchtifer Columbich.
Wait, was it Bitchtifer Columbich?
It's,
or
it's
Christopher Columbich?
No, it's Bitchtifer Columbich.
Bitchtifer Columbich.
For sure.
Okay. Just now that we have that, pretend I said that first, actually.
Every time you say his name again, It's Bitch for
okay,
Columbus.
Bitch for Columbus. Okay. So the fair spanned over 600 acres in the heart of the Windy City, and it was a celebration of human ingenuity, innovation, and just overall progress. From the moment that the fair opened its gates to the public on May 1st, 1893, visitors were transported to a dazzling utopia of architectural marvels, technical wonders, and cultural showcases. The fairgrounds were adorned with stunning neoclassical buildings, including the iconic White City with its shimmering facades illuminated by thousands of electric lights.
Oh, yeah. If you guys haven't read Devil in the White City, pretty good. Just shouting that out.
It was basically a marvel in itself during a time when electricity was still a novelty. Because remember, this is 1893. The main attraction of the fair, which was located in Jackson Park, was a big pool symbolizing Bitch Defer Columbitch's journey to the new world. Chicago beat out other cities such as New York City,
boo,
Washington, D.C.,
boo,
and St. Louis,
boo,
to host the fair.
Yeah. I did it.
It was a big deal socially and culturally, and it had a huge impact on American architecture, arts, industrial confidence, and just kind of overall how people saw the city of Chicago. The fair was basically a giant melting pot of cultures and ideas, and it attracted millions of visitors from around the globe. From the majestic Ferris wheel, which offered breathtaking views of the fairgrounds, mm-hmm, to the awe-inspiring exhibits showcasing the latest advancements in science, industry, and the arts, there was something for everyone to marvel at.
Yeah, a lot of our museums were built for this specifically, and then instead of tearing them down, which was the plan, because all of these structures were supposed to be temporary.
Most of them were. Down.
Yeah, but like
the pool doesn't exist anymore, but
yeah, but like the ones that do exist are still there, and they're like our main museums, and they're so beautiful.
Also, fun fact, my great grandparents on my father's side, they actually immigrated to Chicago from Ireland to work in the Chicago World's Fair.
Cool.
So I don't know, maybe that's also kind of why I'm a little obsessed with it, because and then I got to thinking and I was just like going down a rabbit hole. But I would most likely not be alive if the fair had not been hosted in Chicago.
Oh, my God.
Isn't that crazy to think about?
You'd be from like New York.
I wouldn't be alive because my grandma would never meet my grandpa.
Whoa.
So like if New York or St. Louis won the bid, my great grandparents would have settled wherever that was instead. Uh-huh. And the chances of my grandmother meeting my grandfather would have been slim to none.
Whoa.
So I probably wouldn't be here had it not been hosted in Chicago.
Wow. Thanks, World Fair.
Thank you.
Thank you for bringing me my best friend hundreds of years later.
Shout out to the World's Fair.
Shout out to all the fair.
And also, like Noelle mentioned, for those who are familiar with H.H. Holmes, and if you've read the book, The Devil in the White City, which is fantastic because it kind of gives you, it's like a history between the Chicago World's Fair and then also simultaneously why, while H.H. Holmes is like committing his murders, because this was the fair that introduced the world, introduced us to the enigmatic figure of H.H. Holmes, who was.
Yeah, his little murder hotel.
He was America's first documented serial killer. So, and this was kind of like, I don't know, his playground, pretty much.
Super gross. We should do an episode one day on H.H. Holmes.
Oh, yeah. That's a whole, yeah. So Holmes, whose real name was Herman Webster Mudgett.
Yeah, what a loser.
Fucking lame.
Oh, it's me, Herman Webster Mudgett. Will you hold this bloody axe really quick?
So he used the fair as a hunting ground for his heinous crimes, luring unsuspecting victims into his elaborate murder castle that he touted as a hotel for visitors.
Hotel for people who want to get murdered. Mm. What was that, H.H. Holmes? I said people who want to be alive still. That's what I said. Wow, what a weird way to say hotel. Well,
alive. I said alive. That's what I said. So his murder castle was also located just a stone's throw away from the fairgrounds. I mean, this is a geography podcast, so about 3 miles, actually.
Right.
Oh, and there's another piece of Chicago haunted history that no longer stands, his murder castle. Mm-hmm. Obviously, I mean, if you know anything about H.H. Holmes, it had, like, a bunch of, like, weird rooms and, like, torture areas and, yeah, whatever. So they obviously torn it down, and it was torn down around 1938, which also means that it stood for a long time.
Like, so long.
Why? What are you doing with this city so of Chicago? Long.
They're like, what do we do with this blood room? I don't know. Just, like, leave it open for, like, 20 years.
Anyone could just come in if they feel like it.
Yeah,
you
it's
know.
Fine.
So anyways, his murder castle was torn down in 1938, but the Inglewood Post Office was erected on that piece of land. And it's not fully, like, in the exact same spot mm-hmm. of where the castle was, but it overlaps a little bit. And some say that the basement of the post office is haunted.
What's worse, a post office or a murder castle?
A post office.
Yeah, 100%. 100%.
For sure.
Yes, 100%.
Also, question for everyone listening. Does your post office also hate you and suck and lose all of your packages all the time? And then when you're like, hey, where's this package? And they're like, sorry, we delivered it to the wrong address. There's nothing we can do. Bye.
They do it all the time.
It's happened to us like 4 times in the last.
And they're like, oh, your address doesn't exist. So we're just going to send this back to the sender. It's like, what? I ordered it and I know where I live.
I would like to know if that's everyone or if it's just our post office.
Hey, Postmaster General, if you're listening, which I know you are.
We know you are.
Write to us at quiteunusualpod@gmail.com and tell us why you fucking hate us so much.
Why do you hate us?
Why do you hate me?
Anyways, I don't want to get into H.H. Holmes because, like Noelle said, that is a whole episode in itself. So just kind of like a little brief because he does come up and it's during the time of like the Congress. So. And actually, he frequented the Congress Hotel quite a bit.
Gross.
Yeah. So while there's no record of him actually murdering anyone in the hotel, it was confirmed that he used to hang out at the hotel, just like loitering around the lobby and the bar to seek out his victims.
Yeah, it's a really nice hotel, but you know what's missing? A murder pit. Mm-hmm. You guys should consider putting one in.
Yeah, so he would, like, prey on young women because you know how he, like, also claimed he was going to hire them for his pharmacy?
Yeah.
So he'd, like, hang out there and be like, hey, you want a job? And then, like, walk them back to his murder castle because his murder castle was only a few blocks away. So he also, like the fair, used the Congress Hotel as, like, a hunting ground for victims.
So gross.
It's disturbing, yeah. But anyways, back to the fair. Because another huge part of the fair and the construction of the buildings, such as the Congress Hotel, was that it demonstrated to the world that Chicago had recovered from the devastation of the Great Chicago Fire, which had devastated much of the city in 1871.
So very recently.
Yeah, about 20 years prior to this. Which actually brings up another question that just like flitted through my mind as I was doing this.
Like, I know what you're going to ask.
Does everyone know about the Great Chicago Fire, or did we just learn about it in school because we're from Chicago?
So I don't know because I'm from Chicago.
Right.
But I feel like everyone had to have learned about it, right? And then maybe like we just spent more time on it?
I don't know. I ask because, I mean, you know, children are all taught wildly different things depending on where they live.
Yeah.
So who knows? Maybe not everyone learned about it.
Okay, write to us at quiteunusualpod@gmail.com. Did you learn about the Great Chicago Fire if you did not live in Chicago?
Or Chicagoland area. So I guess just a bit more Chicago history for you here. But for those who are unaware, or maybe you just forgot because you learned when you were in like third grade.
Or you never learned because you're from like a state that, I don't know.
Alabama.
Teaches you that Noah's Ark was real, but the Chicago Fire wasn't.
Right. So if you didn't know, in 1871, a massive fire started in Chicago that swept through the city, and it lasted from October 8th to the 10th. So imagine a fire just raging through a city for like 2 days. It's insane.
Yeah, because everything was flammable mm-hmm. because there was like all the sidewalks were made out of wood and they all had like dried leaves under them. So it was the perfect avenue. Yeah,
everything was made out of wood, basically.
Yeah. It was like the perfect way to like keep something on fire all of the time. Mm-hmm. It had to burn itself out.
Yeah. It actually resulted in the deaths of around 300 people, which doesn't sound like a lot, but also remember this is 1871. So that's a lot of people for 1871. For sure. And it also caused the destruction of approximately 3.3 square miles of the city, including 17,000 buildings, which is crazy, and rendered more than 100,000 residents homeless, which, again, were astronomical numbers even now, but more so because it happened in 1871.
Yeah.
The fire originated in a neighborhood southwest of the city center, and it was just fueled by a prolonged period of just hot, dry, and windy weather conditions, just combined with the fact that there was wooden construction everywhere.
Literally everything.
Everything was made of wood. And there are many theories as to how it started, but the most popular one, we were taught in school, I'm pretty sure you were too, is that an Irish immigrant named Miss Catherine O'Leary was milking her cow when he kicked over a lantern, and that started it all.
Well, she kicked over a lantern because the cow was a girl. You said he kicked over a lantern. She was milking a girl cow, and
no, she was milking her cow, when he kicked over a lantern.
So she was milking a male cow.
Oh, she kicked over. Yeah, well, you know this cow.
Oh, okay, of
had udders.
Sure, of course.
She was milking a cow when she kicked over the lantern. It could have been like the boyfriend like standing there for support. You don't know.
It
doesn't have to be the cow that she was milking. It's just one of the cows. A cow in her barn.
It could have been.
No one knows.
Nobody knows.
No one even knows if this is what started it.
No one knows that. They're just like, let's blame this old lady.
Yeah, we're just going to blame this cow. So the World's Fair was a way for Chicago to kind of show everyone that this little two-day-long fire wasn't going to keep us down, you know?
Yeah, it's like we get knocked down, but we get up again. You're never going to keep us
down. You're never going to keep us down. That's Chicago's slogan. I don't know if anyone knew that.
That's true.
But it is. So the Congress Hotel was a part of that progress. And as I mentioned, the hotel was located at 520 South Michigan Avenue, and it was right across from Grant Park, basically in the heart of the city. And it was built to accommodate fairgoers. And unlike many other structures, this structure built around this time has withstood the test of time. This grand hotel has witnessed over a century of history, including both triumphs and tragedies. But what truly sets the Congress Hotel apart is its reputation as one of the most haunted hotels in America.
It looks haunted, if you guys have seen a picture.
Oh, yeah. And the inside is like it still looks like kind of like how it looked like when it was first built. So this 11-story building initially was conceived by architect Clinton J. Warren as an extension to the Auditorium Theater, which was located across the street, and it was intricately connected to the Auditorium Theater via an underground passageway, which was adorned with marble, and it was famously known as Peacock Alley.
Cool.
The hotel underwent significant expansions and renovations after the fair, first in 1902 and then again in 1907. And these expansions, they were overseen by the esteemed firm of Halliburton Roche. And they basically just expanded the hotel's footprint to a massive 1 million square feet.
It's huge.
Yeah. I mean,
Like, you can see, like, what, like, the OG, like, was. It's, like, a spooky little building, and it says, like, Congress at the top with, like, bright red letters.
And they still have that sign, too.
It's so cool looking. Yeah. It looks haunted.
Yeah. Oh, for sure.
Yeah. But then you can see, like, the giant, like, expansion, too, which is also very neat.
And currently, the hotel boasts an impressive 871 guest rooms and suites, and it's basically just a testament to its enduring legacy and architectural significance. During the 1930s, the hotel was managed by Ralph Hitz's National Hotel Management Company, which was a trailblazer in the hospitality industry.
Hitz's Hotels.
There are rumors that the hotel was owned by Al Capone back in the day, but there is just no proof of that, and it's basically just that, a rumor. Capone did frequent the hotel very often, but there is no proof that he owned the place. It was just kind of like a popular hangout for him and the boys.
Yeah, it was like swanky, you know?
B-O-I-S. His boys.
His boy. His boys.
Also, during the 30s, a section of the hotel served as the venue for the Benny Goodman NBC radio show. And with the onset of World War II, which this is very interesting, the government actually acquired the Congress Hotel because they repurposed it into a training facility for the U.S. Army Air Forces.
That is so cool.
Isn't that so interesting?
I had no idea.
Like, imagine a military training facility in the middle of Chicago.
Well, we have that one just north of Chicago at Great Lakes.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that makes perfect sense. Like, we're a huge hub.
Yeah, like, at the time, I feel, World War II, that was, the war was just on everyone's minds. So,
oh, yeah.
Like, it wasn't weird to have, like, a training facility in the middle of the city.
No, I mean, we got to learn how to kill Nazis somehow, right?
Nazis. So after the war ended, the hotel resumed civilian operations in time for the summer political conventions of 1944. So during this period, John J. Mack held the position of president at the Michigan Congress Hotel Corporation, and he basically just oversaw its resurgence into the bustling hospitality hub that it once was. In 1950, the hotel was acquired by the Pick Hotel Corporation, which spearheaded a major renovation project encompassing the entire establishment. And this extensive refurbishment introduced new suites and also dining establishments and kind of just like revitalized the hotel's allure. Further enhancements took place in the 60s, characterized by the addition of a grand ballroom.
It's so beautiful.
I have never been. Have you been to the Congress Ballroom?
I have been there. It is so beautiful. It's like the whole ceiling, it's got to be hand painted. It's so ornate. It's absolutely beautiful.
I need to go. Well, I mean, after I did this, I was like, I need to stay.
Let's
here.
Go.
Just for fun.
Wait, what are you doing later?
Nothing. Also during the 60s, they installed escalators, which both enhanced the aesthetic and also functional aspects of the venue. Currently, the hotel operates independently without affiliation with any national chain, which is also kind of cool. I feel like it should be.
Yeah.
It's like old and
like
historic.
Like a standalone, you know? Like she's doing what she wants.
If it was like the Hiltons, the Congress, like that would just be weird.
No, this is terrible. But this is like the Congress. Like she's moisturized. She's in her lane. She's like minding her business.
Hell yeah. Since 1987, ownership has rested in the hands of a group of investors, basically just ensuring its continued legacy and evolution. And I respect that. So from the moment you step into the grand lobby, I've never been, but this is what I read about online. So now I'm going to tell you. So as you step into the lobby, you can feel the weight of history just pressing down on you. Throughout its illustrious history, the Congress Hotel has played host to numerous presidents and has served as the venue for several significant events. Among the distinguished guests who have graced the halls of the Congress Hotel are Grover Cleveland, William
the Muppet?
Wow. Him.
Wow.
He was there.
I knew it.
William McKinley, Theodore Roosevelt, William Howard Taft, Woodrow Wilson, Warren Harding, Calvin Coolidge, and Franklin Roosevelt.
Wow.
Both Roosevelts.
All the Roosevelts went there. Eleanor was there. I know it. Eleanor Roosevelt was my favorite president.
Among its esteemed guests, the Congress Hotel hosted the iconic, legendary escape artist Harry Houdini. In 1926, Houdini stayed at the hotel during his show at the nearby Oriental Theater. And rumor has it that he astounded both hotel staff and guests by showcasing one of his renowned tricks right in the lobby.
Being a famous man who is also only 5'6".
Tom, is he?
Yeah, he's super, super little. Tom Cruise style.
Wow.
He was the Tom Cruise of the day.
Well, whatever he did, he left everyone who witnessed it in awe.
Small, did his own stunts.
Small and did his own stunts. Those are his identifiers.
Charismatic.
The Congress Plaza Hotel has welcomed a plethora of notable guests over the years, including actress Lillian Gish, author Mark Twain, British Prime Minister Winston Churchill.
I like that you specified that.
What?
People know who Winston Churchill is.
Well,
they?
I say actress. Everyone knows who Mark Twain is, too.
Oh, true.
And musician Louis Armstrong. Today, the hotel continues to attract visitors eager to immerse themselves in Chicago's vibrant history and reside in a tangible piece of the city's storied past.
When you walk in, it feels historic.
Does
like, it? Like a lot of like down like hotels in downtown Chicago have like the original, like the floors are original, like the ceilings are original.
Yeah, they're like historical landmarks. So they preserve all that.
It's amazing. You walk in and you feel transported, and the Congress is like such a beautiful example.
Have
of
you
it.
Stayed there or just been
I've
there?
Never stayed there. No, I went for a brunch like a few Mother's Days ago. And like you walk in and like when you go into the ballroom, it's fucking stunning. It like takes your breath away.
I need to go. As mentioned before, the hotel was located within a neighborhood that was once rife with organized crime in Chicago.
In Chicago? Organized crime?
Crazy, right?
On crazy.
It's crazy.
You're crazy, girl.
Throughout the Prohibition era, the Congress's bar became a notorious gathering place for bootleggers and gangsters such as Al Capone. Rumor has it that he commissioned the construction of a secret passageway that linked the hotel to the neighboring auditorium theater. Remember the Peacock Alley?
Yeah.
There's a rumor that he was the one that was like, we need to do this because it allowed him to transfer alcohol, which allowed him to evade authorities.
Oh.
Yeah. They're all about secret tunnels in the Prohibition.
Secret tunnels.
In the Prohibition era, because, you know, that's how they got shit done, basically. There's also another rumor that Al Capone, had a suite on the 8th floor and that he's also said to haunt the 8th floor, but it's just a rumor. There's no proof that he ever had a suite, but there just is proof that he did hang out there a lot. During the nighttime hours, a robust figure clad in a suit reminiscent of Al Capone has been seen wandering the corridors of the 8th floor in the North Tower, which is, I think, where that rumor kind of got started.
Yeah, but, like, back then, like, men wore suits, like, period. Right. Like, if you were outside of your house, you were wearing a suit.
Right. You, like, a pinstripe suit, like, a fat guy in a pinstripe suit, and you're like, Al Capone.
Yeah, or...
Is that you?
Is it the Penguin or Al Capone? I simply can't tell.
No one will know.
Danny DeVito, is that you?
Danny!
Danny!
Given its tumultuous past, it's no wonder that the Congress Hotel is shrouded in tales of the supernatural. It's regarded as the most haunted building in Chicago and one of the most haunted hotels in the nation. Its corridors are reminiscent of scenes from a Stephen King novel and are said to be teeming with spectral entities. Amidst these winding passages lies one room in particular that stands out, and that is room 441. So notorious is its reputation that it remains unoccupied unless specifically requested by an adventurous guest seeking a thrill.
So obviously we're doing this.
So us, yeah. That's us. Otherwise, it remains eerily silent, save for the mysterious presence that is said to inhabit its ancient confines. I also read that they mostly just use it for storage now.
It's got like rolls of toilet paper in it.
Yeah, it's
and they're
just like extra bedding.
some paranormal investigators want to stay here tonight. We got to move all this shit out.
Yeah, pretty much. So this is actually the room that is the room that apparently Stephen King stayed in when he wrote 1408, based on that.
Makes
so
sense.
I don't know. But it's also kind of sad to me because it's like not only are they keeping like visitors away from it, like us who would want to stay there and investigate, but if it is haunted by a ghost who clearly likes to interact with people because they're haunting people who stay in there, it's kind of sad for the ghost too, you know?
Oh, for sure. Like they're like bad. Alone.
Yeah. Like they're just kind of forgotten and their room is just filled with junk now.
Yeah, they just like have to hang out by like a bunch of bottles
like
of
that
like
sucks.
Pine Sol and toilet paper and shit.
Room 441 is notorious for being inhabited by the spirit of a woman. Guests have contacted the front desk to complain, describing sightings of a figure standing near the foot of the bed and disturbances such as inexplicable kicking and banging sounds. So some people also say that, like, they get pulled, like, from the end of the bed by this lady, which is kind of freaky.
Oh, my God. I heard that someone heard, like, a knocking noise that sounded exactly like the drum solo from that Phil Collins song.
Is that her?
She's here. She's here with us now.
Shit.
No.
There's no recorded history of any suicides or deaths occurring in this room. But the circumstances surrounding the woman's demise remains a mystery, leaving guests to speculate about her origins and the events leading to her presence in the South Tower of the hotel.
All that we know for sure is that she is a huge Phil Collins fan.
She loves him.
That's all we know.
Being room 441 on the fourth floor, one would think that this would give you a view of Grant Park and Chicago, right? Fourth floor, right?
Sure.
But what makes this room even more creepy is that it's actually partially underground.
Really?
Yeah. So I was confused by this too, but I read a blog post and maybe this guy was just lying, but in the blog, it was a guy who stayed in the room in 441 and he shares a picture of the window and it looks like you're in a basement and there is a window, but there's like a cement barrier in front of it. So no, like, you know, when you're in a basement and you can kind of like see the ground and then you like see that little half, like that's kind of like what it looked like, but it was like cement and then you could like see out the window.
Right.
Which is, I don't know why that's a fourth floor thing.
I don't know, but angel numbers, 441, fourth floor.
But it also explains why many believe that this room is haunted because like I mentioned with Al Capone and he hung out there all the time. His associates would also stay at the Congress quite often as well. And there is a rumor that he might have used this room to hold hostages and question people in.
Oh.
You know, sometimes torturing them for answers or even murdering them if they were in a rival gang. And also given the location of the room and the fact that it's underground, covered by a cement block, it would be, like, the ideal location in this hotel to, like, torture someone.
Yeah, and also anything under or involving a cement block is just extremely gangster coded.
Yeah, exactly.
So he's
they
like,
love cement.
They love a cement
block. They literally
block.
Love
they
it.
They literally love it. It's like their state bird is the cement block.
The bathroom in room 441 is supposed to be super haunted. Like that's the most haunted part. The lights apparently constantly are going on and off by themselves. The door is always opening and closing on its own.
Can you imagine having violent diarrhea, okay? Like, you just ate something you should not have had. You had your third Italian beef for the day. Extra hot jardinera.
Oh, yeah, because you're in Chicago visiting, so you have to.
Obviously. Like, you got you a belly to. Full of deep, like, deep dish pizza in you.
And Italian beef.
You are, like, maxed the fuck out. Mm. You got the meat sweats. You're sitting in the toilet.
Chicago dogs, too.
3 to 4. I ate two hot dogs for dinner, like, an hour ago.
She did. I saw her.
I did. You're on the toilet. You got the meat sweats. You're scrolling through TikTok and you just see, hey.
Well, you
and then, like, the door opens and closes. And you're like, well, come on, man.
And then you see.
At least bring me toilet paper. I'm out.
And then you see a woman in a white dress with long hair staring into the mirror with a sad expression on her face.
Yeah, because you're stinking you're up like, the fucking place.
Right. She's like, please don't clog it. The plumbing's really old.
I literally can't, ma'am. I'm so sorry.
It's historic plumbing.
No one wants this to be happening, okay? I'm sorry.
Look at me.
Don't look at me.
The ghostly woman in white has also been spotted looking longingly out of the window.
Yeah, because she wants to escape the fucking smell of this bathroom, man.
And people have also awoken to her standing at the foot of their beds.
Judging for what they did earlier.
Saw what you did to the bathroom, sir. Most people... It's not a good episode if there isn't like a diarrhea joke in it, though. So
I'm sorry. I feel like I've been making a lot of shit jokes lately.
No, it's fine. Everyone's fine. Most people who have stayed in the room describe the vibe to just be off. Like it just like as soon as you walk in, you just kind of feel uneasy or just uncomfortable while being in it. Other typical haunting things happen in the room or have been reported, like footsteps or like things moving. The feeling of somebody watching you, temperature drops are often reported in this room as well. So basically it's just got like a lot going on at the moment, you know. There are no confirmed deaths in the room, but room 441 has garnered more calls to the front desk than any room in the hotel. That's why most people say it's like the most haunted, even though like there are other, we'll come across other rooms that we do know of deaths, but for some reason, this is like the hot spot. Guests have recounted witnessing objects in motion and doors opening and closing. And I read that the room, it's not being rented out, but I did see that they have like a haunted package. And I don't know if that was like a prior thing or if they're still doing it, but from what I was reading, I'm under the impression that they just kind of like cut it off.
That makes sense.
I did read something that it was like, oh, if you request it, you can get it. But if they're using it as storage, it doesn't make sense that they would clear everything out because one person wanted to rent it, you know?
Yeah, that doesn't make sense.
Unless it was like for TV. Then I could see them being like, okay.
Oh, yeah. For sure. You get Bagans in there screaming at the diarrhea ghosts, they're going to let them in.
Which apparently Ghost Adventures and Ghost Hunters have both been here. I don't know if they have specifically investigated this room, but... it has been investigated before, so they're not like completely like not open to it. They're just, it's not like something they like want to advertise. I think they don't want to be known for being haunted, you know?
Well,
which I don't know why not. It's fucking dope. There's another haunted room in the hotel, and surprise, surprise, room 666.
Are you fucking kidding me?
Also known as the Devil's Room.
No, why is it called the Devil's Room?
No one knows.
That's crazy.
Literally no one knows.
That's a fucking angel number.
666. So this is another room that is rumored to be haunted. And funny thing about this room, which also is kind of creepy, is that it's concealed behind wallpaper.
What?
And boarded up from view.
Why?
No one knows.
No, someone knows.
Because the devil, it's his room.
Oh, and shit. He doesn't want to be bothered.
He doesn't want to be bothered. He's like, leave me alone.
He's like, I'm trying to, I ate a lot of pizza today, okay?
This is a lot of deep dish.
I got the Bee Gees. Leave me alone.
He's got IBS and he just ate a bunch of cheese.
I mean, that's how we do it, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're not going to not eat deep dish.
Well, lactose intolerance. Ugh. Never stopped me before.
So if you're a visitor and you're just strolling along the sixth floor corridor, you'll come across room 664. And then there'll just be like a long stretch of blank wall where a doorway should be. And then it will be followed by room 668.
So can you get in?
No. It's completely.
They like boarded it up?
That like does not exist.
No
so,
shit.
Over the years, several theories have circulated regarding the mysterious absence of this room 666. And the most chilling tale says that the room was once utilized by Satanists for dark rituals, potentially unlocking a portal to the netherworld. Which is like, come on. We get it, okay? We get it. A more plausible explanation suggests that room 664 serves as a managerial office. And that the space of room 666 was just kind of like repurposed to accommodate this expanded office space area.
Yeah, that probably makes the most sense. And then also right. because people are fucking weirdos, they right. don't want people posting up at like room 666.
Exactly, because they already know that the hotel's got a lot of history. It's haunted. Yeah. And yeah, they don't want anything to do with it. Like, you know yeah. how some hotels like don't have a 13th floor?
Right.
It's like, but you know, just because you label it 14.
La, 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 la. I can't because, hear you.
Just because you say it's 14 you. Doesn't mean that like no, numerically no, no. it's not la, la, 13. La, la, la. But it is interesting, though, because some window washers have come out and said that the room, like, so you can only see it from the outside, right?
Oh, shit.
And they say that the room is just, like, left with furniture, kind of like if it was just, like, boarded up, like,
oh my God.
Really quickly, like, if something happened.
You know who we should call to find out, to peek through those windows?
Who?
Jared Leto.
Oh, my God.
He could scale the sixth floor of a building.
If he scaled the Empire State Building, he
I mean,
can
he
scale.
Started 200 floors up, but yeah, otherwise. He could scale six floors of a building.
He could do it. He's done it before.
He'll do it again.
He'll do it again.
Whether you want him to
so
or not.
He got
not.
Another tour that he needs to promote? Because he can do it.
We should have him peek through the windows. Be like, Jared, what is up, dog?
Tell us what's there. But apparently it's just like a normal room and there's just like the furniture is all still there. So I don't know. Maybe they just closed it up to keep something from getting out.
Probably because people are little creeps and like.
Or maybe it actually is just like an like the the managerial office. And like the furniture is like actually just like this guy's office.
Yeah,
furniture.
Just like it's like there's like a little plaque that says like Todd on it.
Right. It's like his desk.
Yeah.
Room 759 is also, I guess, kind of haunted. Another former inhabitant reportedly closes the door from within whenever guests attempt to enter. So the legend, the story behind this is that there was an occupant who lived in this room who was an elderly gentleman, and he was a long withstanding resident. And his son, like he was getting older, and his son wanted to relocate him to a nursing home. And this man didn't want to leave, so he was refusing to leave the hotel. So he resisted his son's efforts and those of security guards, and he just was, like, shutting his door, would not let them in. So it's, like, that's the theory of, like, why when you're trying to get into this room, like, it's just, like, the door closes and, like, won't let you in. To this day, he remains resolute in his determination to reside at the Congress Hotel indefinitely. So he doesn't want anyone coming in. He doesn't want to get pulled out, basically. Another ghost.
Okay, well, it's not really his choice, so.
I mean, he's there forever now, so it's kind of what he wanted.
I guess, yeah.
Another ghost said to roam the hotel is that of an entity called Pegleg Johnny.
Oh, poor Johnny.
Apparently, Pegleg Johnny was a homeless man with one leg who met a brutal end in the alley behind the hotel.
Oh, that's so sad.
At 520 South Michigan Avenue, and according to some accounts, he was deceived into entering a room on the seventh floor where he also met his end. So we're not sure if he ever existed or if he died in the hotel or in the alley. But many claim that Johnny's tormented spirit now wanders the halls of the Congress Plaza Hotel, occasionally manifesting in rooms and, like, manipulating lights. He's kind of like a trickstery entity.
Well, he's got that peg leg. You know, it's kind of fun.
It's also, like, hey.
It's me. This is a prime example of how a nickname is not always a gangster nickname. Because his name is Pegleg Johnny, but if it was Johnny Pegleg,
then he would be a mobster.
That's a mobster. Yeah. Pegleg Johnny, that's just a guy.
He's just a guy, yeah.
Just a dude with a peg leg.
With, yeah.
I feel really bad peg for him. Leg. Johnny Pegleg? That's a guy. You look twice at Johnny Pegleg.
You don't want to fuck with Johnny Pegleg.
You don't want to fuck with Johnny Pegleg.
You don't want to
Pegleg
him.
Johnny, you're going to fuck with.
You can fuck with him, yeah.
Yeah.
Probably.
Also, this is very sad if this story is true.
I know. In the Florentine room, security guards patrolling the area during the late hours have reported hearing music emanating from behind locked doors. Additionally, the grand piano that sits within the room has been known to play melodies of its own accord while the lights are flickering on and off on their own.
But it only plays Sia's Chandelier, which is crazy.
That's the only song it knows.
That's a ghost's
so
favorite
weird.
Song, yeah.
The Gold Room, which is renowned for its opulence. This actually might be the room where you had brunch, the Gold Room. I don't know.
Maybe.
I know that there's like a lot of weddings that are held in it. So it's supposedly haunted by spectral brides and grooms.
What? Just like a bunch of brides and grooms.
It's like the wedding room. Like a lot of people, it's like, I don't know, a thing.
Ooh, it's haunted by weddings past.
Mm-hmm. Some witnesses claim to have glimpsed a bride and a groom standing on the second floor balcony, while others have described seeing a couple engaged in a ghostly dance in the heart of the ballroom, which I think is kind of romantic.
It's extremely romantic.
It's so cute.
It's so nice.
Other rumors have circulated that bridesmaids posing for photographs in this room, like near the piano, sometimes fail to appear in pictures.
Whoa.
Isn't that crazy?
Because they're prettier than the ghost bride.
Maybe.
They look better, yeah.
I mean, sometimes they're obstructed by otherworldly entities, I guess maybe trying to like get into the action, be in the picture, you know? But isn't that crazy? Like, imagine taking a picture and your friend's just like not there. Super cool.
And then getting mad and being like, where the fuck was Brittany for this?
Brittany,
you're out of the fucking friend group. I was there, I swear to God.
I swear I was there. The phenomenon known as the Hand of Mystery.
Ooh.
Has ignited widespread debate among local historians and skeptics alike.
I'm so excited to hear what this is.
Positioned behind a balcony in the Gold Room is an eerie hand-like effigy, which it appears to emerge from the drywall.
Whoa.
And we'll post a picture of this because it's super cool looking. But so it looks like there's a hand like coming from the drywall gripping a metal bar.
Okay.
So this mysterious spectacle has captured public attention in 2006 when Adam Seltzer, he's like a well-known tour guide. I don't know if he was doing haunted tours here, but he's like, I don't know, he does a lot of tours. So he photographed the Hand of Mystery, which kind of sparked speculation that maybe a worker had been sealed within the drywall. And this was like his hand creeping out.
Oh, no.
Some theories have even linked the phenomenon to Al Capone's era, although historical records fail to validate any of those claims. Ultimately, Seltzer dispelled the myth, revealing that the wall lacked the required thickness to conceal a person. So it's now just believed that the Hand of Mystery is merely a whimsical glove embedded in the plaster.
A whimsical glove?
Serving as a playful prank rather than a sinister enigma.
You know what? If I ever get to haunt something, I hope I too can be a whimsical glove.
You want to be a whimsical glove?
I would love to be. I want to be a whimsical glove when I grow up.
While there are many rumored ghosts and stories to go along with them, there have been quite a few reported deaths that have happened at the hotel. I mean, this hotel is 131 years old. Like, there's obviously going to be some shit like that going down, you know? So over the years, the Congress Hotel has been the unfortunate site of several instances of suicide and drug overdoses and just some also just like accidental deaths.
It makes sense. There's enough people stayed there.
It's bound to happen.
Right.
Yeah. In 1900, Captain Lou Ostheim, that's how we're saying that.
That's how I would say it.
Was a veteran of the Spanish-American War, and he tragically took his own life in the hotel with a pistol.
Mm.
Sadly, this just makes it even worse, his wedding was scheduled for the following day. And while authorities attributed his death to suicide induced by what is now recognized as post-traumatic stress disorder, Captain Lou's family and friends just strongly rejected this explanation, citing that his military service, there's no way. Like, he knows his way around a gun. Like, this wasn't an accident.
Right. No, that's like, yeah, exactly.
But, I mean,
like, he knows his way around a gun, and also, like, he was in the military for a long time.
Right. So,
like,
and it was noted that he did suffer from PTSD, but at the time, it wasn't, like, no one knew what PTSD. I don't even think there was that term for it.
No, for sure not.
So, and also, if you, like, had any feelings as a man, you were told, like, not to. So,
yeah,
like, just, I don't know, rub some dirt on it and don't cry. So, like, even if he did have something, it's, like, his family, yeah, it wasn't acknowledged.
They're like, eat a salt tablet.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's actually believed that he had a night terror and then, like, woke up from a nightmare and then shot himself kind of in, like a panic, I guess, and, like, the whole thing was an accident, which is even more sad.
Wow, PTSD first appeared in the DSM in 1980. That's when, like, PTSD.
No shit.
Became like a thing.
Did you just Google that?
I did.
Holy shit.
Isn't that crazy?
That is really crazy.
That seems too recent.
Yeah, that's... Well, I mean, years after mental health, like in acknowledging mental health issues is very recent.
Yeah, that's true.
It's shocking how recent it is.
Oh, yeah, that's true, actually.
So that actually doesn't surprise me.
Yeah.
He did not leave behind any sort of note, which just kind of left a lot of unanswered questions. Nonetheless, many believe that his spirit lingers within the hotel, often appearing as the elusive shadow man.
Ooh.
And he's frequently sighted in the hallways and, like, sort of following guests around.
That's sad.
And it's sad. This part's going to get you in the feels. So some believe that you see him in the hallways following people because he's searching for the woman that he was supposed to marry.
Oh,
isn't that
no.
Heartbreaking?
I just got goosebumps.
I know.
I wonder if he's one of these, like, haunted grooms.
Yeah, maybe.
Or something.
Maybe.
Oh, that's so sad.
Although he's only seen in the hallways, not the ballroom, so... Oh. Yeah. A security guard once caught sight of him and chased him all the way to the rooftop. However, upon reaching the rooftop, the guard found absolutely no trace of him. He had just, like, mysteriously disappeared. So, kind of creepy, but also very sad.
Yeah, super sad.
In May 1910, a man named James Kennedy, and not the Vanderpump James Kennedy, for those who are Vanderpump fans.
Okay.
But a man named James Kennedy arrived.
Wasn't that also a reality show? The James Kennedy, like, experience or something? Jamie Kennedy. There yeah. It is. So he, like, pranked people.
Yeah. Yes, that was.
Sorry.
So in May 1910, James Kennedy.
Not Jamie Kennedy.
Not Jamie
of
Kennedy.
MTV
of MTV fame. Or James Kennedy of Vanderpump Rules fame.
No, this is a different guy.
Yeah. He arrived at the Congress Plaza Hotel while he was traveling from New York. So he was staying here. And the story goes that he removed, like, every kind of identification tag from his clothing. So, like, dry cleaners, stuff and like that. He also burned anything, like, any papers or any sort of, like, anything that could reveal his identity. And then he ventured across the street to Grant Park, where he tragically took his own life with a pistol that he had purchased earlier that day.
Oh, wow.
So he didn't die at the hotel, but he, like, left all his belongings there
yeah.
and was just like, bye.
That's super sad.
I know. In 1916, local mining magnate Morse Davis was discovered dead in room 312. An autopsy determined that Davis had succumbed to cyanide poisoning. Subsequent investigations unveiled that Davis and his wife had entered into a suicide pact prior to his demise.
Whoa.
So his wife was found collapsed at their home, where she was rushed to the hospital, but fortunately she survived. She later said that she had mistakenly ingested Epsom salt instead of cyanide, and that's why she lived. It was later revealed that she had attempted suicide once more at St. Mary's Mission House, where she was being nursed back to health. She apparently tried to jump out of a third-story window to, I guess, complete this pact that she had made with her husband, and then she was transferred to a psychiatric hospital after
that's super sad.
I know. An insurance salesman named Andrew Mack was visiting a friend at his room in the Congress Plaza Hotel before he then proceeded to Lake Michigan, where he apparently drowned himself right near Van Buren Street.
Jeez.
And more suicide accounts include a salesman who plummeted down an elevator shaft.
Wow.
A vagrant who leaped from the rooftop of the North Tower. And then a distressed family man who took his own life by hanging from a cupboard hook at the hotel.
Oh, super sad.
Yeah.
People go to hotels a lot to, like, end their lives.
Yeah.
That's super dark.
I know.
Like, super sad for the people working there, too.
Right. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So incidents of misfortune have also left a lasting impression on this establishment, obviously. In 1904, an elevator operator at the auditorium annex suffered a tragic fall of 70 feet to the subfloor, which obviously resulted in his untimely demise right on impact.
Yeah.
On an evening in July in 1926, an elevator malfunction tragically resulted in a Galesburg woman named Harriet Harrison when she fell six stories down the elevator shaft to the hotel basement.
That's also very sad.
Harrison was staying at the Congress Plaza Hotel with her husband for a few nights, and she actually had intended on, like, she was going to embark on a month-long vacation in Europe come August.
Oh, wow. So this is just a freak accident.
Yeah. And we talked a little bit about the haunted rooms earlier. So, like, we talked about room 441 and then room 666, but...
What about room 669?
There's no... You know what? I didn't find anything. I don't think there's like a horny ghost living in there. And he's like, hey, baby.
He just goes, hey.
Hey.
Nice.
So we talked a little bit about those rooms, but there is another room that is considered a hotspot for paranormal activity. But there is a real life. So like the other ones, like no one really knew what had transpired to cause the activity. But in this room... we do know of a real-life horror story that is attached to it, and I'm going to put out a warning. It's very, very, very sad.
Okay.
So according to an article I found, the room is 1252. And some people also claim that this is actually the room, the infamous room that Stephen King had stayed at, which inspired the story that turned into the movie 1408. So, while the fourth floor has its fair share of ghostly activity, many believe that the 12th floor in the North Tower is the most haunted throughout. And the North Tower itself is just kind of a hotspot. So it's a hotspot in the hotel. So there have been reports of, and there are many different rooms. And the one article I was reading was like this ghost hunter guy, and he had been to the Congress Hotel a bunch of times, and he was like, I promised I wasn't going to list all the rooms in the North Tower, but all he said that there was like, there are a lot of haunted rooms in the North Tower, but I think the hotel wants to like kind of keep it on the DL because they don't want people like requesting it or knowing, and you know, they don't want like the press, the media about it, I guess.
So the North Tower is the original building, right?
I'm not sure if the north or the south, because there also are, like, room 441 is in the South Tower. So there are hauntings in both.
Yeah.
But the North Tower is just kind of said to be like more haunted.
Okay.
And so, like, I guess there's rooms where there are, where paintings will just, like, rotate 360 degrees, and it just happens in just, like, various rooms. Apparently there was an impromptu, and this is just a rumor online, there's no like proof, but there was an impromptu exorcism that took place in an unspecified room on a winter night in Chicago, which apparently was not too long ago, but this was, this happened apparently in a room there in the North Tower, and then I guess the individual was then relocated to a nearby convent. There is another room that was hastily vacated by two Marines in 1989. I guess they apparently ran out of their room, dashed through the lobby in their boxers at 3 a.m. because they had stated that a towering black, like, clad figure, like a shadow, had emerged from the closet and just approached their beds.
They were like, what is that?
It's the unknown.
No!
And they just ran. They booked it. Additionally, there is a room where a woman tragically slit her wrists in a bathtub after a night on Rush Street in the 70s, and it said that her apparition still appears to weary guests during the night. And all of these things happen on the North Tower. But one room in particular is room 1252, and it's in the North Tower, and it has a dark and gloomy past, and it has to do with the mother and her two sons. So... you could probably guess where this is going.
Oh, yeah.
In August 1939, Adele Langer and her two children, Jan Misha and Carol Tommy, checked into the Congress Plaza Hotel, occupying a room on the 12th floor. Though in the article, it was originally reported that by the Chicago Tribune that it was the 13th floor, but reports say that it was room 1252. So also... don't know which one it is, but...
I mean, the Tribune could have been saying it was the 13th floor for, like, you know, spectacle also.
Right, but there's some debate. We don't know, but 1252 seems to be the room with a lot of activity. And the 12th floor is haunted AF. So Adele was a Czech Jewish refugee who had fled to America with her two sons on a six-month visa after fleeing from the Nazis during World War II. Adele and her husband, Carol Langer, owned the Heinek Marprels textile mills in Prague, which were valued at $1.5 million, which would be around $30 million in today's money.
Oh, wow. And they had to escape from the Nazis.
So in order to get out safely, Carol had to sell the mills for what he said was practically nothing.
Wow.
So he ended up giving it, or I guess like basically giving it, to his oldest employees because he feared that Hitler would just come and seize it anyways. So he's like, I might as well give it to you guys. I'm not going to be able, because he's a Jewish man.
Oh, yeah.
So he's like, here, take it, basically. That's, I have to flee.
That's super sad.
I know. Adele had anticipated reuniting with her husband, Carol Langer, at the Congress Plaza Hotel. However, her husband's arrival took some time, and he failed to materialize when he said he was going to come. So as days turned into weeks without any sign of him, any note from him, she's freaking out. Her desperation just kind of gave way to despair.
Yeah. I mean, it's 1939. He's in Nazi-occupied Europe, and she's waiting for him. And, like,
he's not showing up. So she's thinking the worst.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So she was overwhelmed by the disappearance of her husband. And she, at the time, they didn't have any money. So they went from being like $1.30 million
wealthy
to now she's in this country that she, foreign country. She doesn't have a job. She doesn't have any money. She's trying to get a job, but she was just like, she couldn't secure any employment. So she has a mental breakdown. And in her like manic breakdown, she threw her son, Jan, and Carol out of a window, and then she leaped after them.
Oh, my God.
So this was from the Congress, so from their room, 1252.
Do we know how old these boys were?
Yeah. So Adele was 43, Carol was 6, and Jan was 4.5.
Oh, my God.
And their three bodies struck the sidewalk on Michigan Avenue, south of Congress Street.
That is the saddest thing I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Heard.
Turns out her husband was fine.
Oh.
He makes it to America, discovers that his wife and two children have tragically died. Yeah. So Carol said that their plan was to move in with Adele's two aunts. So once he got there, they were going to move in with her two aunts while he was going to try to take the money that he had. And he was going to try to go to Canada and start a new business. And at the time, they were just going to kind of stay with her aunts and just, like, figure it out. Carol said that his wife had expressed to him that she was very depressed because, I mean, they were forced to leave their home, basically uprooted everything because of the Nazi invasion. Like, they didn't have anything, like either.
Yeah, I mean, they just fled, I'm sure, out of straight fear.
Right, and he said that she had frequently talked about committing suicide and, like, had talked about taking the boys with her. And I had also read that. So in order to kind of, like, because he knew that she was, like, going through the shit, but there was nothing he could do about it. Like, he's like, I have to, like, wrap things up here. Like, you and the boys need to get out.
Yeah.
So in order to try to, like, I guess ease that, he put the boys in this, like, camp where it was, they were supposed to, like, learn English there because, like, obviously they didn't speak English. So he had put them in a camp to try to, like, also kind of save them because she was going through it.
Yeah.
And I guess they went the first day and didn't like it. So she was like, oh, you can just stay home.
Oh, wow.
And then, I don't know, who knows if they had stayed, if maybe she just would have.
Who knows?
Yeah. But, I mean, so it did not end up.
That's tragic.
Yeah. So another mess of thing, a part of, like, that's goes along with the story is that 6-year-old Carol's body, for some reason, I don't know if it got lost, but it didn't end up in the morgue with the rest of the bodies.
What?
And I'm not sure what happened. Like, the whereabouts of Carol's remains are just unknown. So this has fueled some speculation among psychics and ghost hunters that because of this, he may be still lingering within the hotel's walls.
That's crazy.
Yeah. And on numerous occasions, both hotel staff and guests have recounted sightings of a young boy darting around the 12th floor. And a particularly notable incident reported by John, who was one of the security guards at the Congress Hotel. He spotted a young boy dressed in tattered clothing, and he just, like, observed him standing at a distance at the end of the corridor. Hmm. And when he approached the boy, he said that the boy just merely grinned at him before vanishing, like, right before his eyes.
Wow.
So in addition to the apparition of the young boy, guests staying on the 12th floor have reported experiencing inexplicable occurrences such as their televisions flickering on and off unexpectedly and their personal belongings just being rearranged in their absence. But the presence of a young boy is, like, definitely, like, on the 12th floor, which, I mean, it would make sense that it would be Carol.
Yeah. Oh, for sure, that it would be him, especially if his body went missing.
Yeah.
You know, he might be tied. Who knows? Maybe right. His body was brought back in.
Yeah, no one knows. Today, room 1252 is situated between room 1245 and then room 1520 around the corner. But this room is also inaccessible to the public. So it's kind of been, like, sealed off. Yeah. Because it's rumored to be intensely haunted. It was sealed off. The doorknob was removed.
Oh.
And the door gaps were sealed with adhesive. So basically confining any lingering entities within. But it doesn't seem like Carol is in the room because he's, like, running around the halls and stuff.
Oh, yeah. I mean, well, ghosts notoriously can't walk through walls. So right. Everyone knows that about ghosts.
So across the 12th floor, numerous rooms remain unmarked and securely bolted shut, which is just kind of weird. Like, I was reading this blog post about this man, and he was just like, it was just kind of weird. Like, this room was bolted shut. Like, this door was locked. Like, it was just kind of creepy. And apparently a lot of rooms are like that on the 12th floor. So I don't know if they're doing this because they're haunted or if it's just, like, a storage situation.
I mean, it honestly could be both. Like, oh, right. It's too haunted. We'll put all the toilet paper in here.
Exactly. Evidence of vandalism likely perpetrated by thrill seekers seeking out paranormal encounters is apparent on several door frames. So throughout the hotel, rooms are discovered to be locked with padlocks, and people try to break in because people are assholes.
Try to pry open, like, the door frame.
Yeah. From the tragic tales of Adele Langer and her sons to the sightings of ghostly apparitions and unexplained phenomenon reported by guests and staff alike, this historic landmark continues to just captivate and intrigue everyone.
Yeah.
Regardless if you're into the paranormal or not. Despite efforts to seal off certain rooms and deter curious visitors, the whispers of the past persist within these walls, reminding us of the enduring mysteries that surround this iconic hotel. So whether you're a skeptic or a believer, one thing is certain. The Congress Plaza Hotel holds secrets that may never be fully understood.
What is that?
It's the unknown.
No.
Never understood until we go there and ghost hunt and discover all of them.
Fucking right. We're going to go talk to... I'm going to bring Carol a toy.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure, dude.
Yeah. So that is the story of the Congress Hotel, and now I just have to go there.
That's great. That's great. I love it. Them's the facts about the Congress. Little hometown.
Them's the facts. Hometown horror for you guys.
Little hometown haunting. That's great. It's a very cool episode. We'll post pictures of it on the social means and you'll see it. If anyone's been to the Congress and had an experience, please write to us at quiteunusualpod@gmail.com. Yeah. Also, if you have been to a haunted hotel, period, point blank, we also want to hear about it.
Apparently, I was also reading that they do, which I've never heard of this, that they do a Halloween bash every year.
I want to go to that.
Like in the Gold Room. Like,
really?
Yeah.
Oh, like I want to go. Like a,
I know.
Like a Halloween ball?
Yeah, Halloween ball.
Stop it. I know. We're going.
I don't. So I clicked on the, because it obviously had a link to it, and I clicked on it, and
it didn't exist.
So I don't know if that it happened like years ago and not anymore. But if they're throwing one, I would like to propose that we go.
Haunted Halloween ball.
At the Congress?
At the Congress.
Oh my God, we're going. Okay.
We're so
we're
gonna
go there on Halloween and we'll let you guys know.
Oh My Saturday, October 26th, we're going to go.
Maybe we'll make a little Patreon video and show you, because we have a Patreon. And if you would like to join, we do some behind the scenes and fun stuff on that. It's just quite unusual, Patreon.
That's right.
Just Google that.
Just search for it. Also, you can check out our website that has all of our links to all of our social medias and our Patreon. It's quiteunusualpod.com. Obviously, we're on the social medias because we're addicted to the internet.
8 hours a day, to be exact.
And that's down from last week. So.
And as always, remember to celebrate the strange.
And keep it unusual. Okay, bye.
Okay, bye.
Okay, bye. We're not saying bye.
Okay, bye.
Okay, bye. And this is a part of the show where we give praise to the all-knowing cult leaders, supporters of the podcast, and all-around benevolent beings.
To Tim M. He has done it. He's brewed a cup of coffee so caffeinated that he has been able to stay up for 6 days straight.
Oh.
Unfortunately, he's received a cease and desist letter from the government. I'm afraid Tim may know too much.
Be careful, Tim. Mm. Don't answer the door for any men in black. KGT, she recently got a tram stamp to match the Mothman statues.
Beautiful. That's
chic.
So chic. Not vandalism at all.
No.
Adam K tells everyone he can time travel. There's literally no proof that he can't, okay?
Like, how do you prove it?
You don't.
You can't prove it.
You can't.
So maybe he can. Who knows? John S., who played the unknown in the Glasgow Willy Wonka experience. Incredible job, John.
Great.
No.
Caitlin R. became so obsessed with Biodome that she has started converting her house into one. Hope it goes better than the movie did, Caitlin.
Lexi C. has a theory that drumstick ice cream cones contain enough raw energy to create a whole new galaxy.
Interesting.
A theory she is testing at this very moment.
A delicious theory at that. Evan K. is asking for a donation of tissue paper for a new Mothman-themed parade float he's making. Find him at Evan K. needs tissue paper to make mothmansbootyjuicy.com.
Go there and then you can donate some stuff.
Yes.
Lenore M., who's discovered that the friendly hippies living in the tree behind her house are actually just a bunch of gnomes stepped on top of each other in a trench coat.
Oh, well.
It's always the case of this.
Always.
Don't trust anyone in a trench coat.
Mm-mm. Molly M. worked as Pauly Shore's acting coach while filming Encino Man. She's actually the one that came up with the line, "With the churros."
A truly iconic line, Molly.
Iconic, yes.
Tom W., who runs an underground crime syndicate selling contraband makeup from the Fae realm here in the human realm.
Slay.
So that's why those TikTokers look so flawless.
It must be.
It must be.
Thank you to all of our Coven members on Patreon. Without you, we truly are nothing.
We are nothing. We're not worthy. We're nothing in the whole wide world. I don't even know what we are, because certainly we are not fucking worthy.
Not even worthy to be, like, on vandalized on Mothman.
No.
Our sticker isn't even worthy.
No. But I will say, I might get that tramp stamp. I am worthy of that tramp stamp.
Yes, we are. I think we're worthy of that.
Should we get them?
Yeah.
We're going to get them.
I think so.
Okay, after... Yeah, okay. Okay, bye. We're not worthy of that. We're not worthy of anything without you, but we are worthy of tramp stamps.
We're just worthy of the Mothman tramp stamp.
Okay, bye. Bye.